Senate is now back in session. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of you?
You may, Senator.
Mr. President, I don't know if you know this or not, but there's four young ladies with crowns on behind you.
I have noticed that, and it's a privilege and honor for these ladies to be up here helping me.
I think you going to tell us anything about that, Mr. President?
Well, I think the senator from the 7th is going to.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. Mr. President, we're back in session. We have some business, but maybe the senator from the 7th needs to go.
Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I seek unanimous consent to make two very special introductions.
You may, hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. First, I would like to welcome the lovely ladies standing behind you. There are five of them that are visiting the Capitol today. They are from around the state. I'm going to introduce each one of them and the senator that they're corresponding. Brooke Rowe was the USA National Miss Missouri Junior Team, and she resides in the Senator from the 17th District. Libby Carpenter, USA National Miss Heartland Princess. She also resides in the Senator from the 17th. Bridget Caldwell, USA National Miss Missouri Princess, resides in the Senator from the 13th office or district. Rachel Locke, USA National Miss Heartland Junior Teen. She resides in the Senator from the 23rd district. Anna Owen, USA National Miss Missouri Preteen. She resides in the Senator from the 18th district. I would ask the body to recognize their great accomplishments and make them feel very welcome as they visit their state capital today.
Let's please welcome the guests from the Senator from the 7th to the Missouri Senate Chamber.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. I have one more very special introduction. Visiting with us today, we've seen Mr. Brian Kelly. He is the Chairman of the Missouri State Legislative Board for the Brotherhood of Local Engineers. He has brought his family up to visit us today. His wife, Pam Kelly from Kansas City, his daughter, Bree Tyrell, and their two twin sons, Camden and Preston Tyrell. I would ask that Camden and Preston be made pages for the day, and they serve without compensation with the exception of that provided by Brian.
The two young men will be made pages for the day, and would the Senate body please welcome the senator's guest from the Senator from the 7th.
President, while we're at it, let's make the lovely ladies behind you also pages for the day to serve without compensation.
These ladies will be made pages of the day also. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. I'd ask you to recognize the Senator from the 9th District on Senate Bill number 373.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 373 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Again, Mr. President, this bill.
Senator.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hold on just a minute. Let me get back to my place, and then we'll have to bring it back in front of the body.
Oh, okay.
We'll have
I'm
to bring
sorry.
That back in the front of the body. So, Senate Bill 373, Senator from the 9th.
Yes, do I then request that, do I then make a motion that the bill be taken back up for perfection?
Yeah. The Senator from the 9th moves that Senate Bill number 373 with Senate Committee Substitute be taken. Senate Bill 373 be taken up for perfection. As many as of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 9th.
Thank you. Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill number 373 be declared perfected and ordered printed.
The Senator from the 9th moves that Senate Bill number 373 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Does the Senator care to explain the bill?
Yes. I explained it briefly earlier today. Senate Bill 373 seeks to establish the Missouri Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program And this is a win-win, Mr. President. It provides nutritious, fresh fruits and vegetables and local produce for seniors, as well as increases profitability of local farmers and strengthens local economies. And with that, Mr. President, I renew my motion.
Senator from the second has the floor at this point. Senator, on your bill.
Thank you.
Senator the second, you have the floor on Senate Bill 373.
Yes, to inquire of the Senator from the ninth.
Senator from the ninth, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the second.
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. And so the gist of your bill is this requires the Department of Health and Senior Services to apply for a grant, to apply for these grants for this is like urban agriculture to grow fresh vegetables and things.
Well, it's not necessarily just urban agriculture. It would be a statewide program for seniors, for low-income seniors, to be able to be provided with vouchers so that they could purchase produce locally from roadside stands, farmers markets, and some of those other things. So it's not just an urban agriculture program. And I will say that Missouri is only one of seven states that do not currently participate in the program.
Okay. And this is a federal program. The fiscal impact to the state of Missouri is negligible.
I'm sorry?
What is the fiscal impact to the state of Missouri?
The fiscal impact, let me look here again. Have it here, forgive me.
The senator from Barry said it's about $100,000, so it sounds like some administrative costs. But other than that, this would draw down federal money, I would suppose,
right,
if we successfully applied. Okay, good.
Right.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Senator, for the inquiry, and I will be supporting your bill.
Right. Now,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, did he say 500,000? Because I think it's 109.
I think he said 100,000.
Oh, 100,000.
Yeah, so 109.
I thought he said 500.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I wanted to clarify.
Okay,
right.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Bill 373? Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the Senator from the 27th?
The Senator from the 27th. Senator from Cape Girardeau does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms, would you please summons the Senator from Cape Girardeau? Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 24th?
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
And thank you for coming up to accept my inquiry. We're on Senate Bill 373, which is the Senior Farmers Market Bill, which I think is a great piece of legislation allowing our seniors to access fresh fruits and vegetables, many of them produced in their own communities.
I agree.
That is not why I called you up here.
Okay.
I called you up here because I'm trying to figure out where we stand. You and I thought we're negotiating on your Senate Bill 41. And yesterday, well, over 24 hours ago, I thought that I handed off to you some language that you had asked for and thought we were pretty close to an understanding on that language in terms of what amendments might go into that bill. And I ran into you this morning on the elevator. I thought we were going to have something, so I just wanted to ask you, where are we? Because I keep hearing that we're going to be getting back together.
And actually, because my calendar was full from 7 a.m. on, that's why
I haven't had a chance to
visit with you, but that's why I was going to pull you off the floor, but we can discuss it now.
So I don't know if this is...
I prayed about this a lot, Senator, because I'm known as a person that will compromise and work, and you and I have actually done that together.
Right, absolutely.
On bills.
Including this one, I believe.
Yeah. And so I suddenly came to, how come I can't see putting that in my bill? And to me, it was like the ugly stepsisters trying to put their size 9 foot in the glass slipper that's only a size 4. Just no matter how much I tried to get that shoehorn to put that in there, it didn't fit. And I look at it and says, well, that's not even what my bill's about. It's not even what it's trying to do. And now we're adding new things in there. And I just wanted to stick to the First Amendment part
as a defense.
And now that then it suddenly looked like it went on the offense. We're adding other things in there. So, of course, it's too late now. But, if next year you wanted to file a bill that actually did what you're trying to do, separately, and this bill hadn't been heard in committee, and I don't think anyone in my caucus would probably support it, and this was the conversation I was going to have with you.
All right, well, certainly we hadn't had that conversation, and I thought when we had talked yesterday, I disagree with this characterization that I'm now hearing that it has nothing to do with my aspect of making sure First Amendment rights are protected, which is what you wanted to do, that when we are holding ourselves out as some kind of provider of services, that we ensure that the information we're providing to the public is true. It's, this is medical information, that it's medically based and scientific, which is
why
we went
through. And I fully understand what you were trying to do.
Right.
And I don't necessarily have a problem with what you're trying to do, but it's not really within the confines of the bill that I was trying to do.
Well, it's certainly not limited to what you were trying to do, which was give everybody free rein to say whatever they want. And my position is, and we've talked about this, so that it's important that when you hold yourself out as an organization that either gets some kind of funding from the state or the federal government, or even if you don't, but when you are bringing vulnerable people in to help them deal with a pregnancy or decisions around family planning, that when we talk about First Amendment rights and your right to free speech, you need to make sure that that speech in those that has to do with health care really should be scientifically backed up. And that's what we talked about, and that's why I went back yesterday, because you told me at least one organization that you didn't feel we could utilize.
Actually, two, and you didn't put either one of those on
there. All right,
there.
And we didn't put those in there, and so I gave you a list of what I thought that we could talk about, whether those organizations you believed would provide, could be depended upon to provide scientifically and medically accurate information. So I feel like I've been working hard with you.
You have been, and Senator, I appreciate that. That's why I feel so bad, because you have been working on this. You and I would talk, and you'd go back, and we'd visit again. But to me, mine was a very narrow bill. That's why it was even titled as such, and why I asked the senator from Johnson, when he came up with an amendment on my bill, I had a visit with him and said, I like your bill, but really, mine is trying, because that opened up the door. Your mind talked about pregnancy resource centers or alternatives to abortion agencies, but his just opened it up to abortion, and that's pretty broad. And so I even asked one of my own colleagues not to put their amendment on my bill, because I wanted to keep it so narrow and so focused.
Well, I understand you saying that, but part of our process here is that unless there's a bill that's a consent bill, we bring it to the floor, we talk about it, we try to find ways that get to what you're trying to get to. And I am all in favor, obviously, of our constitutional right to free speech under the First Amendment. I am all in favor of the 14th Amendment and all those in between. And I want to ensure that when we are stating that somebody has First Amendment rights, we're not, in essence, allowing them to cry fire in a theater. We're not allowing them to provide information to vulnerable people seeking health care who may be going there and may be delayed or denied the treatment that they're looking for or asking for. So I think this bill is absolutely aligned with your desire to make sure that people have their right to free speech.
And if you remember, when Planned Parenthood came to my office just to visit with me, they wanted to explain to me what they did. I already knew that, but I was being polite to listen to see what they had to say.
I did not set up a meeting with you in Planned Parenthood, nor was I there.
And when they left, I asked them, well, what is there anything in my bill that you can't live with and might have, and I was told, well, they haven't looked at it. Well, that's fine. That was the president and probably didn't need to look at it because I'm sure someone in Planned Parenthood did look at it. I don't think mine just escaped under the radar. It's just that it was something that they looked at and said, well, first of all, it's not even about us. It's not even about Planned Parenthood at all whatsoever. So not that we're going to support it, but we're not in opposition
on
it either.
All right, so let me just ask you to pause for a minute because I don't want you or anyone else in this chamber to be under the impression that I am here doing the bidding of Planned Parenthood.
I didn't say you were. I'm just saying that.
No, that meeting and any discussion you had with them and whether or not they've read the bill and whether or not they support it, what I bring you are what is information that I believe not only serves my constituents well, but serves your constituents well and those throughout the state. Let's make sure that those First Amendment additional protections that you're feeling the need to put in place do not override somebody's ability to get information in a setting that they believe is somehow related to the medical field, and for people to misrepresent either who they are or the facts that surround access to family planning or to abortion in the full range of reproductive rights. Now, it doesn't bother me if somebody goes into a pregnancy resource center or alternatives to abortion and they say, we are not in favor of abortion, but don't mislead or lie about the outcomes of abortion or what it does to somebody's health over the long term. That's what I'm trying to protect. You don't have the right to scream fire in a theater because it's harmful to people. You do not have the right to mislead women in a vulnerable position because you don't like one of the actions they might choose to take under what is constitutionally allowed in this country and in this state.
And if you remember your First Amendment that you offered on the floor, which was very narrow,
is part of
about,
the amendment.
You know,
right.
Medical procedures. Well, we have volunteers, and they don't do medical procedures. You know, they're volunteers.
Well, your volunteers, though, often do, and I don't mean yours. In some of these centers, there are volunteers who do counseling, for example. Well, if I walk in and I see somebody in a white coat who says she's a counselor and she sits down with me, I'm going to assume that means she has had some training of some sort that allows her to call herself a counselor. What we have found is not in every crisis pregnancy center or pregnancy resource center, but in some, those people are misrepresenting who they are. They're simply a volunteer with no background or training in this area. I want to ensure that when that person, maybe that person is the person to sit down, but she isn't misleading the consumer, the pregnant woman, the vulnerable person who comes in and is trying to sort out her options as she finds herself, for whatever reason, whether she's a victim of incest, a victim of rape, a victim, or whether she's just somebody who has found herself in a situation where she is pregnant and did not intend to become pregnant.
And I know you'll say that they're misleading. I haven't seen any evidence of that happening. I haven't seen a report or an article, and there's nothing to say, and I think you actually ended up putting in abortion provider, because I said, well, this is kind of one-sided, but you went ahead and said, well, okay, I'll just open it up.
I want to hold everybody accountable, whether they provide abortions like you can receive at our one Planned Parenthood facility in St. Louis, or whether they don't. I don't think anybody should be misrepresenting the truth to women who are pregnant.
But, again, I haven't seen the evidence that that's happened. I haven't read a report where that's going on, so I don't know.
Well, I haven't seen the evidence or read the report that says that somebody's being denied their First Amendment rights.
Well, it was Senate Bill 203 that suddenly said you don't have First Amendment rights. It was no report I read. It was not Senate Bill, Board Bill 203 that said that. And you also brought up, kind of a buffer zone that, the senator from the 7th talked about. And I personally don't have a problem with the buffer zone. I don't know what it should be.
Right, and we put the buffer zone in. When I delivered it to you, we talked about the buffer zone a couple of times. So we put a buffer zone, or I put a buffer zone into the amendment that I gave you. So it was three parts. One part that was the amendment that I offered on the floor, inserting the word materially again. Sorry for those 10 extra letters. And then we put in something that says, so it says, if you you don't have a defense when you lie to people by saying that you, when you are untruthful with people, by saying when you work in one of these kinds of facilities. Hold on, I have a note, and the second part says, no, I wish I had it in front of me. The second part of the amendment talks about, help me, you recall the second part, we had dollars in there, if I remember correctly.
Had what in there?
I thought that you know what? I should have had my amendment on the floor when I came up to talk to you, but let me just get it in my notes. The third part was definitely about the buffer zone, and you and I talked about this at length. Here's my amendment here. You and I talked about that at length, and I wrote it the way we discussed. You know, I put it all on paper so that you could look at it and make a decision about how it all looked as a whole. Oh, and the second part gave information about medical research, and it specifically called out different areas that different organizations whom we both believed we could trust. You hadn't looked at it yet, so you were going to go through that whom we both believed we could trust to get accurate and scientific-based medical information.
I'm trying to keep the bill simple because there's lots of studies out there, and I read every one I can find, and I've read studies that contradicted kind of what you're saying.
Well, you know
and
what?
You could
and
probably
Senator,
find studies that contradicted what I'm
but
saying.
But I'm not offering any specific, well, they can say this and they can't say this. What I'm saying is it's got to be factual and medically accurate and scientifically based, and that's what I've asked you to look at. I provided you, as you requested, the list of organizations. So, Senator, here I am. I feel like the ball is in your court. I've been trying to negotiate with you
in good faith. And I do appreciate that.
Faith.
You don't know how much I
really
do.
And I want that to be clear because I think people are wondering, where is this? What happened? If the bill has gone away, then the bill has gone away. But if you intend to bring it back, I feel like I've done everything that I can thus far to try to negotiate with you, and I will continue to do so.
And you go negotiate in good faith. We just
absolutely
reached an impasse. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, again, this is my first hearing of an impasse, so I'm happy to go back to the drawing board with you.
Three senators standing. Senator from the 2nd, you are not seeking recognition. Senators, you may proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for letting me call you up for the inquiry. I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 2nd, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 2nd.
I do, Mr. President.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you for the inquiry. I told the Senator from the 9th that I was through discussing this subject for the day and that it would be good to go to her bill, but it was brought up again, so I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this. So the senator from Cape Girardeau filed Senate Bill 41, which is, I would point out, a defensive, not an offensive bill. Board Bill 2.
It may be offensive to some.
Well, it may be. It may be to the aldermen of the city of St. Louis who want to make St. Louis an abortion sanctuary city and run crisis pregnancy centers, an alternative to abortion
Senator,
centers,
you know
and religious organizations out of business, Senator. It may be offensive to them, but I'll tell you, it's Board Bill 23 is very offensive to us who care about First Amendment liberties, Senator. Now, Senator, I just wanted to ask, you used the words misleading the consumer and misleading pregnant women. Whose definition, Senator?
Medically accurate and scientific-based information is the only information that should be provided to women who are seeking help, perhaps because they are pregnant or perhaps because they are interested in family planning.
So let's play this out. Planned Parenthood is on Forest Park Avenue in St. Louis City. Down the road is Thrive and Alternatives to Abortion Center. I guarantee I can posit this for you right now. Planned Parenthood doesn't like the information that crisis pregnancy centers, Alternatives to Abortion Centers, are giving because they're encouraging women to choose life for their unborn children.
You know
Senator.
What? To make that leap, to make that assumption that they don't like information being provided because they want women to be given another choice is only your assumption.
Okay, Senator.
My understanding is that they don't like information provided by some organizations and agencies because it is not factual and it is not.
The Senate will come to order while the senators are in debate. The Senate will come to order. Senators, you may proceed.
Thank you. Because it is not factual, nor is it scientifically based. And again, Senator.
So that would be a question for some trier of fact. Who would the trier of fact be, Senator?
Well, the senator and I have been working on that information.
Okay. Okay. I think what your amendment did the night that Senate Bill 41 was on the floor would serve to give a cause of action against abortion clinics to sue Alternatives to Abortion agencies. I saw the amendment that you brought the senator from Cape Girardeau yesterday, and in my opinion, the senator is free to look at that amendment and accept it or reject it as he sees fit. But in my opinion, it was even worse than what was offered two nights ago during the debate. And all I can say is when we start talking about qualifying First Amendment rights subject to what's determined by a court of law in the city of St. Louis, when one side is massively outgunned in terms of legal resources.
Senator,
over the
I can't
other.
Even allow you to continue down that path when you were part of a large group of the majority in this party who undermined citizens' access to their day in court by forcing arbitration in some areas, by giving corporations the significant advantage over the little guy, by changing the expert witness standard. So please, if you're going to go down that path, let's not be hypocritical.
Well,
let's be consistent.
Well, now, Senator, draw the line between arbitration provisions or the Daubert standard and the First Amendment. Where's that line, Senator?
Say that again.
Draw. I'm not.
They're two different pieces of legislation.
I'm not connecting the dots. The senator from Cape Girardeau offered a First Amendment bill to protect the rights of Alternatives to Abortion Centers.
You're talking
about
that particular amendment that I provided, providing a cause of action. So if we're going to talk about causes of action and you're going to be worried about Thrive or some other agency being crushed by somebody like Planned Parenthood who might sue them for providing inaccurate information that led a woman to make a decision that at the end of the day she was unhappy with because she was given false information, that's how the dots get connected. And if you can't see that, you're the one bringing up the argument.
Senator, I think what I see is either the power of city government or Planned Parenthood, which is a massively wealthy organization, by the way, funded by tax dollars, versus the little guy, the Alternatives to Abortion Center. And that is the point.
Also funded by tax dollars.
That is the point of Board Bill 203. But again, I want to get back to the bill offered by the senator from the 9th. Thank you for your inquiry.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Bill 373? Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Bill 373? Hearing none, Senator.
And
Senator from Cape Girardeau, what purpose do you rise?
Yeah. Mr. President, I have an amendment, and
please send your amendment
forward.
And has it been distributed?
Be distributed, and waive the reading of the amendment.
Senator, so I'm correct, your microphone wasn't on there. The amendment has been distributed?
It's in the process of being distributed.
It's in the process of being distributed, and you're asking for a waiver of the reading? Senator, you're asking for a waiver of the reading?
That's a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. And, Senator, you need to move the adoption.
I move for its adoption.
And do you care to explain your amendment?
Yes. My amendment is, thank you, is the bill I presented in committee, Senate Bill 102, about seniors, and it's looking to establish a stable funding base for senior services provided by the Areas on Aging. Under the Older Americans Act, Area Agencies on Aging are the local organizations charged with designing and funding systems that prolong independent, meaningful life at home and within the communities, avoiding institutional care. Mr. President, as you know, it's a lot cheaper to keep someone in their own home than it is to put them in a nursing facility. The Areas on Agency provide critical services to Missouri seniors. You might be familiar with many of them yourself: meals, case management, respite care, in-home care, wellness programs, Medicare, education, adult daycare, transportation, and a lot more. But the current funding levels only allow Area Agencies on Aging to serve really 10% of the eligible population. So we have 90% of the eligible population of our seniors not being able to get the services that they need due to inadequate funding. And so my bill tries to address that funding issue. Just to let you know, Mr. President, of the seniors served, over two-thirds are over 75 years old. 60% of those live alone. 49% are low income, and 60% are in rural communities. But through the Area Agencies on Aging, they make the best of their very limited resources, and the number of seniors is growing, and the gap between needs and available resources widening. It's part of that baby boomers, where 10,000 people a day reach the age of 65. So 7% of Missouri Senior Center nutrition and information sites have closed since 2012, and that's not a good sign. The senior services rely on those senior service centers, and I think you visited some of those yourself, and I know I have. So 18 out of the 246 nutrition centers have already closed. Of course, nutrition is very important for everyone, no matter what age you are, particularly for the seniors that are susceptible to more health issues. So new funding is critical for restoration and growth, and the senior service centers in Missouri continually struggle against inflation and underfunding. Funding is eroding because we have rising food costs, and the bill that the senator from the 9th is bringing forward talks about, you know, making sure people have good nutrition, and I totally support that bill. Of course, labor costs are rising, and the senior population is getting longer. So home and community-based services can reach the growing numbers of at-risk seniors, keeping more of them independent and actually saving state money, and that's what I look for, saving the state money while improving the health and welfare of our senior citizens.
Does any senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1 to Senate Bill 373, Senator from the 13th? What purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 13th? You may proceed, Senator.
Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon, Senator.
This sounds like a pretty noble endeavor, but I have a couple questions. Sure. I just started reading through it.
Sure.
So has this bill been heard already in committee?
Yes, it has
okay.
been heard.
What committee was it heard in?
That was Seniors, Families, and Children.
Okay.
And that was heard back in February, the 15th of
February. I have a couple of bills like that. They were heard in January,
I know.
And they're
it's
languishing somewhere.
Amazing how slow some things
yep.
work through the system.
So my question is, this is going to establish the Senior Services Growth and Development Program.
Yes, there's going to be.
And it's going to take 2.5% beginning January 1, 2019, and each their year thereafter, and then 5% of the premium tax collected. What is that? Where's that money coming from?
That's coming from the insurance companies and associations that provide in certain types of insurance. That's going to be, and ironically, Senator, as I visited with the area on aging, a lot of the seniors contact the areas on aging instead of the insurance companies for advice, and that really overloads the areas on aging when they could have contacted this particular insurance companies to get that advice. So I guess it would free up those insurance companies from a lot of the phone calls that they might get, but they're actually being passed on to the areas on aging.
So the areas on aging are doing, I guess I'm kind of confused. What kind of questions are they asking? What kind of clarifications do they need that they don't feel comfortable inquiring of the insurance company?
Well, as you know,
I'm just trying to understand this because yeah. I'm not on Seniors and Families, right. So I have not heard the
yeah.
bill.
Well, services that are available, health, insurance that's out there, what they're eligible for.
For health insurance
yes.
purposes.
Okay. A lot
and I can understand why they feel
very complicated. So.
And I can understand why they'd feel very comfortable calling somebody from the area on aging as opposed to an insurance company. But I guess that led to another question of, is the organization qualified to answer those questions on insurance?
Well, they are
okay.
qualified, and in fact, they're very well qualified. But when they can't answer it, then they go get the answer for that person versus saying, well, I can't answer that. Go find out on your own. They walk them through.
Right.
They, you know,
well, and I get
and
that, too, because
kind
of a lot of these
shopping.
Health insurance questions, some people can't answer because of the nature of the question or because it's against the law.
Sure.
So they're allowed to answer these questions. Who makes sure they're qualified to do that? I mean, are these volunteers? Because they're volunteers. The folks at the area on aging are volunteers,
well, there's
right?
some volunteers,
is there,
but there's
I mean, are they tax
staff.
Accountants?
There's, yeah, there's paid staff there.
Okay, that's yeah. what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's all I need to know, but and I'm sure I'm okay with this as long as the senator from the 9th is. Is this going to do anything to the fiscal note she has on her bill?
I didn't look at her fiscal note because I don't think I had a copy of her.
Well, her fiscal note is $100,000 or less.
Okay.
I'm asking you that if this amendment gets on her bill, is the fiscal note going to be affected?
Yes, it would be.
And by how much?
Well, the fiscal note would be $11 million.
And that's what it would cost the state, or that's what's going to be generated?
That's
somewhere?
What it would generate from the insurance companies.
Okay, so it's not going to cost the state. That's what I'm trying to get. I just want to make sure that this is not a lug on her bill, that it's a cost to the state.
Right.
Okay? And I, you know, otherwise I'm fine. Thank you, Senator.
Well,
thank
you. Senator from the 9th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. May I inquire of the Senator from Cape Girardeau?
Senator from Cape, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 9th?
Right. Senator, I guess I'm still trying to understand what you've distributed here. Can you explain it to me again? I'm trying to go through here.
Yeah. You know, are you familiar with the areas on aging at all?
Of course.
There's probably
of
some
course.
In your district,
right.
Yes. And I've worked with them very closely. In fact, I got an award, their Star Award, this summer from them because I've been working with them a lot because they have, you know, a base of seniors that they're trying to help, people that, you know, in poverty, low income,
right.
health issues, and really don't understand a lot of the things that they're eligible for or can have or do. And as that senior population continues to grow, the burden on the areas on agency are also growing, but they have limited dollars and limited staff. And they've determined that there's probably 90% of the people that are eligible for their services that they can't support at all because of the limited funding.
Okay, so those are the AAA. So specifically, what does this amendment then do?
So this would put a 5% phased in over 2 years on the premium tax collected from certain insurance companies' associations, the ones that really support those people in the first place and probably could answer a lot of their questions, but the seniors don't go to them. They may not know they can, and they may not get the individual attention that they probably need because it is so confusing. So they're very comfortable going to areas on agency, which they'll sit down and talk to you and explain it till you're thoroughly knowledgeable on what's available to you and what your options are.
Right,
so this would actually probably be saving those insurance companies money by not having to answer those questions or have people constantly on the phone, you know, working with those.
So this is a 5% tax on insurance companies?
Yes.
To be paid into the fund? When the fund would then go into a fund that would then benefit the AAAs, is that right?
Yeah, right, yeah. It would go into a Senior Services Growth and Development Fund.
Okay. Okay. So the $11 million that you say is the fiscal note really is the revenue
to fund
that it would generate?
Areas on aging, yes. And, you know, to me, it's kind of a public-private partnership. You know, the private businesses are then co-joining with, you know, our public area on aging to, you know, could
right.
make a great difference
right.
in the
so
lives of our seniors and caregivers in our state.
So what bill number was this, Senator?
That was 192.
Okay, and it passed out of
it
committee?
It had a Senate committee substitute it.
Okay,
when
and
I
it
presented
did pass it. Out of committee?
I don't remember if it passed out of committee or not, because I'm not on that committee, Seniors, Families, and Children, so I don't know if they passed it out or not, but it was presented on the 15th of February.
Okay, and then you had folks to testify on behalf of the bill in committee?
Pardon?
Folks testified on behalf of this bill in committee?
Let me... You know, I'm looking at, I normally write on the back of my sheet if anyone testified in support or in opposition or informational purposes, and I don't see anything written there, so I'm just wondering if then no one testified one way or another on it. That would be my guess.
You're doing this on behalf of the AAAs?
Yes.
And the monies from the tax would then be... deposited into account that would be used toward the services provided at the AAAs.
Right.
And there wouldn't be any general revenue that would be used.
It's not
there
general revenue.
There would not be any additional general revenue.
No general revenue.
Okay, Department of Health and Senior Services may promulgate rules, open applies the subject.
And Senator, while you're kind of looking that over, again, you know, when seniors are underserved, which a lot of them are,
right.
then that's costing the state more money. And, you know, this it would be draining private and state resources where now they can serve more seniors than the state won't have to be drained so much when it comes to senior services.
So have the insurance companies, are they in opposition? Were they in opposition to your bill?
Well, as I said, I looked on the back of my bill, and that's where when I'm up there and people come up and testify for an opposition or informational purposes, that I would write down and I could tell you who was in support and who was in opposition. But I don't have anything on here which, according to what I usually do, would say, well, I don't think anyone testified at all.
Had you had a conversation with the insurance companies on the 5% tax increase?
I presented this, actually, this is the same bill I presented last year, so it was already heard in committee last year as well. And
I'm just trying to figure out the potential opposition, mm-hmm. and that the underlying bill is a very, very, very simple
bill. Now, this is the bill I did last year, and you can see I wrote on the back. And there was no opposition. Oh, no, I take that back. I'll run through this. So in support, we had two people from AAA, and one of the people from AAA, her name was Star Kohler, said in 4 more years we'll have 32% more seniors. And we had a Ross Cleric. He's a senior citizen, 80 years old and a widower. But he's not getting the benefits. He's actually helping as a volunteer there, and he's 80 years old, older this year now. He says, when I age successfully, it benefits the insurance companies. And then we had another person. So we had three different AAA people support, and they were different AAA organizations. But I did have one in opposition, and that was someone from the American Insurance Plans. Now, that was last year's bill, and I modified it from last year's bill. So that might be why, because I always try to work with people and say, well, what would make it look better or work better? Right. And that might be why there was no opposition this year, that I, as far as I can tell.
After looking at it, it appears as if it would be okay. I'm just trying to make sure that we don't kill the underlying bill that we're trying to get, of course, for seniors. So I'm just trying to make sure that there isn't a whirlwind of folks that are going to come out in opposition, and we just can't get simple produce, of course, for seniors in a nutrition program. So I think they're looking at that now. So you filed this bill for, you said, 2 years?
Just last year, I believe, was the first year I filed it.
Okay. And it was really at the request of the AAAs.
That was heard on, of course, that was late. Passed out 6-0. Passed out 6-0. Last year, I didn't offer it because I was working with the AAA agencies to try to get it right. And so I didn't get to offer it until April 5th. So actually, what, a year ago today, isn't it?
Oh.
A year ago today, the anniversary. But you can see if you offer a bill in committee on April 5th, you know, it's probably not going to be able to be heard on the floor.
Okay. All right, Senator, thank you.
You're welcome.
For the inquiry.
Thanks. Does any other senator desire to be heard on amendment number one? To Senate Bill 373, Senator from Barrie, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the Senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Barrie?
I do. And
Senator from Barrie, you may proceed.
What happens a week from today? Remind me.
A week from today, everyone in this body will be wearing seersucker.
That's right. We'll see.
Including the Senator from Barton.
Oh, I know he's going to have one for sure, because he's a real team player.
Yes. Yes, he is. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, you know. But actually, what I want to do is just talk about your amendment just a bit, since it came through seniors, families, and children.
And I appreciate you hearing that bill for me. 2 years in a row, I might add.
Yes.
You've been very gracious.
But we've made some good improvements here. And I just want to point out that, you know, the premium tax does not excludes any money being transferred to the state school's money fund.
That is correct. That's a
very,
very important.
Yes,
because that wouldn't go over very well.
No. No. But this would give the AAAs a solid funding source.
Yes.
That's going to, we won't have to think about, well, are we going to give the AAAs this much money or this much money or this much money?
Right.
It will be dedicated to the AAAs.
And, of course, you and I aren't getting any older, Senator. We're still
very
viable and youthful, but unfortunately, there's other people that are getting older. And, you know, as I mentioned, that in 4 years, and this was last year, so now I have to say in 3 years, the senior population is going to grow by 32% more. And so that's a very heavy burden on those areas on aging.
Right. You know, I was, we were, my mother-in-law has not been well. She has a compressed fracture. And we were trying to get she lives about, 4 or 5 miles from Monette, Missouri. And we were trying to get Meals on Wheels for her, which the
very important
AAA Zoo.
Yes.
But do you know there's a waiting list?
Oh, there is?
And we had to go a different route.
Oh, see, my mother-in-law is also on the
Meals on Wheels.
The Meals for Wheels list.
Yeah.
But fortunately, she's getting it. And I can tell you how important that is to her. Because she's staying in her own home,
mm-hmm.
which we know if she wasn't, that would cost the state more money if they're in some long-term care facility. So she's been able to stay home, having the meals delivered, and even though she'll turn 95 this July,
wow.
she's still very healthy. And I believe that Meals on Wheels program is part of the reason why she's so healthy.
Yeah, so
today.
We're, fortunately, my wife, we live about 15 miles from her, and so my wife is doing the Meals on Wheels.
So she's the Meals on Wheels.
She's the Meals on Wheels and the in-home care right now. But anyway, I just wanted to reaffirm that this is a good bill. It doesn't take any GR at all.
Right.
It's just from this premium tax, and so we're just transferring some of that money to, I think, a very good cause.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you next Wednesday in your seersucker. By the way, I got mine on Monday.
Did you? Well, yes. Yeah, you were having to
have had to have a new one.
Yeah, because you're so muscular now.
Yeah.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1 to Senate Bill 373, Senator from the 7th?
President, to inquire of the Senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 7th?
I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, can you tell me real quick, what was the original bill number of this amendment, and when was it heard? I'm having a hard time finding the...
It was 192. It was the original one last year, Senate Bill 192.
It was from last year.
Yeah, that was... You said, you want this year's bill number.
Yeah, this year's bill number for this amendment.
Sorry, this year's bill number is 192. Last year's was... You don't want last. Do you want last year's bill number?
No. I just need.
I have it here, but yeah, this is 192 from
192. And what committee did it go through?
Seniors, Families, and Children on February 15th.
February 15th.
Passed out 6-0.
Okay, so it's on the calendar then, or was it not turned in?
Actually, it is on the calendar.
It is on the calendar. So it's on the informal. We rolled it when we rolled all of
that
them
is
over
correct.
There.
And I don't know how far down it is. Probably quite a ways.
Okay, so tell me, I'm sorry, in a nutshell, just the Cliff Notes version, what exactly are you looking to accomplish here?
Just a second. You got my curiosity up. Well, never mind. But yes, it is on the count. And what was your question, Senator?
Tell me the Cliff Notes. What are you trying to accomplish?
Okay, the areas on aging support our senior citizens and their... They don't have enough funding. They can only support 10% of the people that are eligible for their services.
Okay.
They've had to close 18 senior centers already, and I've been to probably 4 or 5 of our senior centers in my district, and they're very well attended by seniors, very important to their health and well-being, because not only do they serve food, which is, of course, important, but they also offer different recreational activities, games, puzzles, television, bingo, and that. So the senior service centers are very important, and but they've had to shut down 18 of those. So whatever population was dependent on those 18 nutrition centers, they're no longer able to participate in that. And health is important at any age, but as you get older, your diet is really important.
Right.
And they get a good, balanced, nutritious diet at the senior centers. And if you have good health, good nutrition, you're probably less likely to require a lot of medical care as you get older compared to someone who is not eating properly or not eating at all or eating the wrong things.
Did you see or read or see social media about how the Trump administration is talking about getting rid of Meals on Wheels?
I have not, no.
You haven't seen? I mean, it's been a big social media push that trying to protect senior citizens' access to Meals on Wheels, and they were going to reduce the funding for that. You would, I mean, if you support
well,
this.
Obviously, I'm not for that because here I'm carrying a bill want to help that. So I guess the president and I probably disagree on that part.
Okay. And then so what would be, let's say we adopt your amendment here, we put it on to Senator from the 9th legislation, what would be the outcome of this going into law? What would be, what is it, tell me what the mechanism is, what does it do for those 18 facilities?
Well, the 5% tax on certain, for premiums on certain insurance agencies would go into, and we call it the Senior Services Growth and Development Fund. And then that would be used by the areas on aging all around the state to continue to support the growing needs of our senior citizens.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that explanation. Mr. President?
Senator from the 7th, purpose you seek recognition.
Inquire the Senator from Jefferson.
Senator from Jefferson. Senator from Jefferson, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 7th?
Yes, I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
President. Senator, anytime I hear the word insurance, I can't help but ask you if you've had an opportunity to take a look at this and if you're, what your thoughts are on us putting a 5% tax on this for seniors. Because clearly, I'm with the Senator from CAPE on wanting to provide better nutrition options for senior citizens, and if these 18 facilities have closed down, and this can help prevent some of that, then I'm likely to support it. Right. But I want to hear from your perspective.
Sure. I think it's a great amendment. I think it's a great bill because we're not really increasing the tax. This tax is already a tax that's in place. It's a 2% tax on all the premiums that are written in the state. So this is just taking some of that money that right now is going into general revenue and taking it and saying we're going to send it to this specific need that we have. So it's not increasing taxes. Now, premiums are always going to increase just naturally every year. You know, insurance costs more, everything costs more. So that 2% is going to continue to increase in the state as the revenues come in. But I think this is a good amendment, and I fully support it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th, Percy Rice.
Senator from the 9th.
Senator from the 9th, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 7th?
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
President. Senator, I've heard from the Senator from CAPE. I think it's reasonable what he's trying to accomplish. I heard from the Senator from Jefferson, who I feel comfortable that, you know, it's an existing tax. Now, you're the bill sponsor. Are you concerned at all that putting this amendment on your legislation is going to have any effect on its ability to make it through the House?
Well, you know, I hope not. I didn't have much time to be able to research it, of course. So it did pass out unanimously, which made me feel a little better about it. I just wasn't familiar with it at all, of course, when it was distributed. But it sounds like, you know, clearly I'm very much a supporter of our AAAs around our state. And as long as there was not any widespread opposition to this bill, then I believe I'm fine with it.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senators desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1, Senator from the 13th? What purpose do you rise?
May I inquire of the senator from Jefferson?
Senator from Jefferson, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 13th?
Yes, I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
So, Senator, this is, you've heard this bill before?
Yeah, it was in a committee on senior family and children.
Senior families. Is it an insurance bill?
No.
Well, then why are we involving insurance companies? It seems to me like it's both.
Well, it could be. So it's a tax.
That's all I needed to know, Senator. Okay. May I inquire of the senator from the ninth?
Senator from the ninth, do you yield to an inquiry?
Senator, I hate to beat a dead horse, but I think this is a good amendment.
Senator from 13th, Senator from the ninth, you yield.
I do.
Senator from the 13th, you may proceed.
I think this is a good amendment, and you have a really good bill. I just feel it's an insurance bill, and I'm sorry that this bill wasn't heard in the insurance committee. I chair Progress and Development, where we hear tourism bills and we hear things about the arch and the zoo and everything else, and some tax bills. So my point is that some things have different meanings behind them, and they are not necessarily going to end up where everybody wants.
Right.
It's unfortunate that this insurance bill went through seniors and families. I'm glad it did, because I think it should be passed. And if the insurance industry is good with it, and the senator from CAPE is willing to carry this bill, then I'm glad that it's going to land on your bill, and I'm going to support it.
All right.
But I truly wish that I could have heard this bill in insurance. Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1 to Senate Bill 373? Senator from Barton, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire the senator from CAPE.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Barton?
Yes.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. I'm confused. I'm looking on my calendar, and I can't find 192 on the informal or the formal calendar. Are you sure it was voted out of committee?
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
I think we're getting signal that it's still.
I'd have to inquire. I thought it was on the calendar. I didn't.
So apparently, I'm guessing it was heard in committee, maybe was voted out, but wasn't turned in. I'm getting
sure.
A signal that that's what it was. So it's not on the calendar, but it was, because you gave a vote, and I was trying to put those together.
Okay.
So you said the vote was 6-0?
6-0.
Okay. And I appreciate the senator from Jefferson, because I was wondering if this was a tax increase, if it was going to go into premiums. What he said, if I understood him right, is that this is an existing tax. It's being redistributed.
Yes.
And I do have some concern about that, Senator. Do you ever get concerned that we're taking too much stuff out of the hands of the legislature in terms of the appropriations? And I mean, basically, that's what we're doing here, isn't it? We're saying that rather than having to appropriate funds to AAA, we're going to have a dedicated stream now that would otherwise have come into. I mean, obviously, we've talked about that with transportation. We've talked about other things. There are times we do that.
And I understand your concern, Senator, but with money dwindling down, just like any other, say, nonprofit organization would, you know, they get maybe grants and different things, but it's never enough to cover what they're trying to do, so they have to go out and find other sources and other donors, and that's kind of what this is doing.
You know, when I first began to look at the bill and I saw the treasurer part,
yes,
I thought, oh, maybe we're trying to raise private funds here so we don't have to go against the budget.
This wouldn't restrict, you know, this doesn't replace what's budgeted to the senior service.
Right, I saw that. I saw that it protects that. I'm just a little concerned that, you know, when one of the things of the budget process, are you on appropriations, Senator?
This year for the first time.
Okay, I'm not, but one of the concerns there, obviously, is that you are charged, now that you're on appropriations, you're charged with prioritizing those expenditures.
That's correct.
According to both what the revenue stream is expected to be or whatever limits are put on you as appropriators, if we were able to get the senator from the 23rd's proposal through, then it wouldn't be the projected revenue. It would be something else. But you're in charge then of deciding where do those monies go. And I guess one of the concerns I have here is we're saying you don't get to decide this one anymore. We're elevating this one to the top, and we're saying this is more important than anything else where that money might have to go, and so we're going to take it out of the hands of the appropriators and say it's locked in. And that always concerns me just a little bit. So, all right, but that is what we're doing here, right? Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1? Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from St. Genevieve. Cape Girardeau.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan. Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Senator, I'm concerned about a possible Hammerschmidt problem on this bill.
Concerned about what, Senator?
I'm sorry?
You said you were concerned about, and
a
I didn't hear what
a possible Hammerschmidt
you...
problem with your...
Oh, the Hammerschmidt?
So tell me again, what is the premium tax that's collected under Chapter 148?
This would be 5% of the premium.
Right. Well, what is that premium tax used for?
What's it currently used for?
Yeah.
I'm not aware, Senator.
Okay. Well, what your amendment does is it says take 5% of the premium.
Some of it goes to the... some of it goes to the state school monies fund, but my bill does not touch that at all.
What does Chapter 148 deal with? I mean, what premium? Premium for insurance, or?
Yeah, I don't have that in front of me.
Well, before we go and we take some of the premium from, say, an insurance company that's probably earmarked for something, don't you think we ought to know at least what we're taking the money from?
Well, that didn't come up during testimony either last year or this year.
Okay, so your amendment is a bill, was a
That's
bill.
That's correct. It was heard April 5th of last year, and then it was heard February 15th of this year.
Okay, and so was it your bill?
Yes.
Okay, well then, do you know what... the premium tax under Section 148.320 and 370 has to do with? I mean, what are we taxing the premium on?
And, Senator, I don't have those sections here with me.
Okay. I guess that being that we might be talking about health insurance premiums or life insurance premiums or managed care company premiums or something, and it probably doesn't have anything to do with the Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program. I'm just concerned that, you know, the senator from the ninth bill might have a pretty big Hammerschmidt problem here. And so that's what I'm wondering about. I'd like to know what those sections have to do with. That's all. I mean, and I don't know how to get that information in a timely fashion here. Okay, but anyway, thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on amendment number one? Senator from the 23rd, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire from the senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield from the senator from the 23rd?
Do you have your
senator
Tucker already?
Senator from Cape Girardeau. Question to you is: do you accept the inquiry?
Yes, I do.
Three senators standing. Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
I raise a point of order. I think the amendment goes beyond the scope of the bill. This is going to affect general revenue and have a pretty big effect, which I don't think it has much to do with farmers markets. So I would raise point of order.
Your point of order will be raised to the President Pro Tem of the Senate. Does any senator desire to be heard on the point of order? Does any senator desire to be heard on the point of order? Three senators standing. Senator from the ninth, what purpose do you have?
Thank you. May I inquire of the senator from the 16th during the point of order?
Senator, right now you can speak on the point of order or against the point of order.
Okay. I withdraw my request. Thank you.
Does any senator desire to be heard on? I do. Does any senator desire to be heard on the point of order? Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
Speak on the point of order.
You may proceed.
Mr. President, the underlying bill relates to the Missouri Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program, and it opens up Chapter 208. The amendment would change that title from the very limited title, Missouri Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program, to seniors, which is a very broad title. And it opens up Chapter 192, and it refers to a premium tax that is in Chapter 148. Now, I don't know if the I don't know what that tax is on, but the title Missouri Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program, the operative word there, or words, are nutrition program. The modifying words are senior and farmers. And so this amendment would have to do with the AAAs, which obviously have something to do with seniors. And it may be true that seniors do Meals on Wheels, or the AAAs do Meals on Wheels, but I don't know that it's naturally related. I don't know that this amendment, which would take money from an unknown chapter and give it to the AAAs, is necessarily about a nutrition program. It talks about creating the Senior Services Growth and Development Program Fund. So I just can't see that it's naturally related, and so I would argue that the point of order should be well taken. Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the point of order? Is it Senator from Newton, what purpose do you rise?
I'll be to rule the point of order, Mr. President.
You may proceed.
I'll take that under advisement.
Senator from the 23rd, you have the floor.
Senator, good afternoon.
Yes.
I am
next
reading.
Next Wednesday, Senator.
Oh, Wednesday. Tell me about Wednesday.
Well, next Wednesday, I'm going to see you in this really nice seersucker suit. It'll be great to look over there and see how well you look.
Senators, stand by just a minute. Stand by. That bill will be now placed on the informal calendar and is no longer in front of the body. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Staying on that same calendar, I'd ask you to recognize the Senator from Callaway County on Senate Bill number 220.
Senate Bill 220, Senator from Callaway. Senator from Callaway.
May I inquire of you while we're waiting?
You may.
Did you know Callaway, the nickname for Callaway County is the Kingdom of Callaway?
Kingdom of Callaway.
Yeah, so therefore the senator from Callaway is here. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senate Bill 220, Senator from Callaway.
It's making a lot of noise. Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 2220 with Senate Committee substitute be taken up for perfection.
The Senator from Callaway moves that Senate Bill number 220 with Senate Committee substitute be taken up for perfection. This means the opinion that motion shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, do you care to move for the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute?
Mr. President, I move for Senate Committee substitute. I move that it be adopted. I do have a Senate substitute. I move for a waiver of the reading as it has been distributed.
Senator, send your substitute forward. We got to adopt.
Mr. President,
I'm sorry. Senator, now do you move to the adoption?
I would move that Senate substitute for Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 220 be adopted.
All right. And Senator, you asked for a waiver of the reading?
Yes, sir.
Senator. And do you care to explain your substitute?
Yes. Senate Bill 220 changes law in regard to product liability claims by adopting a statute of repose which limits the time period during which a cause of action for a product's liability claim can arise. This legislation creates a de facto 10-year safe life of a product during which time a suit may be brought to recover damages that resulted from a defective or unsafe condition of said product once it is placed into the stream of commerce. This new legislation would not apply to real property or improvement to real property. In addition, the new standard would not apply if the person against whom an action is brought has knowingly concealed any defective or unsafe condition in the item that is the subject of the action, or has knowingly concealed any negligence in the item's construction, manufacture, sale, distribution, or placement into the stream of commerce. Also, the statute of repose would not apply to actions regarding negligent service or maintenance of a product. The substitute also added latent diseases to the list of things that will not be applicable to a statute of repose. If the manufacturer, lessor, or seller states in a warranty or an advertisement that a product has an expanded useful life of longer than 10 years, that stated useful life plus two additional years shall be the new term in which a cause of action for product liability can take place. We must all agree that objects in our everyday lives cannot be expected to last forever, and thus we must not put an undue burden on our manufacturers that they could be on the hook for something made half a century ago. A reasonable statute of repose is something that must be added to our laws if we expect Missouri to be a place that encourages manufacturers to locate here. I'm happy to take any questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
Does any senator desire to be heard on the Senate substitute? Senator from Barton, will she rise? Senator.
Inquire the Senator from Callaway.
Senator from Callaway, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Barton? You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I just had a question on the floor sub.
Yes.
I'm reading the change. It says that instead of now we have knew or should have known, we're changing that language to has knowingly concealed any defective or unsafe condition.
That was originally in the bill before the committee sub, and so it's just putting it back in.
Okay. I know you're not an attorney.
Right.
And I'm happy to inquire of an attorney if you're not able to answer this, but do you know whether those are terms of art or what the significance is of those two phrases?
The significance is the ability to prove that. So if you knowingly concealed, which we've already had a number of cases, you know, that they have found records or emails that, you know, they were talking about hiding the fact that they knew there was a problem, and those you can prove in court. on should have known if these products are very, very old, decades old, you might not be able to find any records or anybody was around when that product was manufactured.
That makes sense, right. So that
so it's unable to prove it.
Right. Basically, that's that creates a whole lot less uncertainty with the language that you're moving back to on the Senate side.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate substitute? Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise? Senator from Callaway, do you yield to inquire from the senator from Buchanan? Senator, you may proceed.
So, Senator, right now,
let me grab my mic. Sorry.
Right now, as a citizen, if I feel that I've been injured by a product, I have a statute of limitations that applies from the date that I suffer the injury, and then when the statute of limitations runs, I no longer have the ability to sue, correct?
Right. That's limitations. It's a statute of repose.
Right. But right now, I have that ability. No matter when it happens, if I'm injured, if I think that I have been torted, I have the right to go to court and address my grievance before the court from the date that it's injured, no matter when it is. It's going to be 30, 100 years later. I have that right as a citizen right now. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Okay, but if your bill becomes law, then the statute of repose, which starts with the introduction of the item in the stream of commerce, runs 10 years according to your bill, correct?
Correct.
So you're basically taking away some of my freedom to go to court as a citizen who feels injured, because if I'm injured, say, 11 years after the item was introduced into the stream of commerce, I no longer have the ability to go to court and ask the court to redress my grievances. And I want to make clear that that's how I see this. Now there's a trade-off. I and everybody else in the state of Missouri are giving up our freedom to sue after the 10-year statute of repose. And in return, some manufacturers are gaining some freedom from me being able to sue them. That's how I see this. Is that a fair characterization of what's going on?
This is not about negligence or hiding the fact that they have a bad product. None of those things apply here.
Well,
how long do you think a product should stand the test of time that it would be safe? I mean, how long? Do you think 100 years? Do you think years?
Well, if I believe, if I am injured or someone in my family is injured and I believe that it is the fault of the product, then right now I can go to court and I can make a case before the court. The court impartially decides, okay, you're right, you're wrong. The court is supposed to make a decision, and if they say, oh, it's been 30 years, I mean, there's no way, they're going to find against me. Now, the problem is that people believe that it's too big of a burden on manufacturers to have this threat hanging over them for a long time. And that's a valid argument. But, I mean, let's at least be upfront and honest that everybody in Missouri is giving up a little bit of their freedom so that the manufacturers can be relieved of this burden. I mean, that's what's really happening. And that's, is that what we should be doing here? You know, a lot of people suffered and died fighting for our freedoms. And so I am one who is very reluctant to give up any of my freedom. I feel that every day we come to this chamber, we give up in 5 minutes what took a long time to fight for. And so
Senator, I hear what you're saying, but let me give you another scenario, or two. So we want our manufacturers that are here in the state to stay in the state. We also, and we want them to be able to expand, you know, hire more Missourians, employ more of our citizens. We want to be able to attract more manufacturers to our state. And what has been happening is we have a number of them that instead of spending that money to expand and hire more citizens, they're having to spend it to win lawsuits. So let's take this example. When I was growing up, and basically I'm in the generation that grew up in the 50s, so I had, my brother and I had a little red wagon. And we played with that outside and went up and down the hill with it and just had a blast. My parents hung on to a lot of things because they grew up during the Depression. So that little red wagon was still around when I had children. And my children played with it for a while. But at some point, because it had been outside and the hall, twigs and branches in the yard, the paint was off in a lot of places. It had gotten rusty in a lot of places. But let's just say kids and I were riding down the sidewalk in this little red wagon, and because it's so old, the wheel fell off, tipped us over, and my son broke his arm. So at one point is the company, the manufacturer of that little red wagon, negligent? At how long does a product have to last in order to be safe in the economy? Because we want our manufacturers to produce quality products, and they do. And if you make a quality product that has been around for decades, at what point, me as a parent or me as an individual, am I being negligent by looking at a product that probably shouldn't be used for that purpose anymore?
Well, I would say that if you went to court against the manufacturer of the Little Red Wagon, then the jury of your peers would look at the situation and say, that wagon has been left out in the rain many days, it's rusted, it's normal for Little Red Wagons to rust. When you bought that wagon, you didn't have any expectation that it would last longer than the average Little Red Wagon. And the jury would throw the case out, or the judge would.
But the manufacturer still has to pay those costs.
But you would have to pay your attorney's cost, and to you, it's worth it. And the thing is, you said that manufacturers won't stay in Missouri, but doesn't this law allow? I mean, let me back up.
Okay.
If I have a product and the manufacturer is in Kansas, I can sue that Kansas manufacturer under Missouri law, can't I?
I believe so.
Well, then what difference does it make? Why would it matter to the manufacturer where they were located if I'm suing them under Missouri law anyway, just because they're an out-of-state company? Why is that an incentive to not be in Missouri?
I'm just telling you, we've already lost a number of manufacturers. We don't want to lose any more jobs.
You mean, well, they left the United States, or?
For various reasons, but we are doing things to try to make sure that we are protecting the consumer as well as helping our businesses be productive.
Well, that's well and good.
We may philosophically disagree, Senator, and I understand that.
What you've done is you've chosen 10 years arbitrarily. I mean, you could have chosen 11 years. You could have chosen 9 years.
Looking at a number of the other states that already have statutes of repose, it's in the middle, basically. It's kind of a middle-of-the-road number, and it seems, and a lot of them have 10.
Okay, well, that's a reasonable answer. Here's the thing. I hope that you can see my point here, is that as a citizen, your bill takes away from me some of my freedom. to go to court and seek redress of my grievance. In your case, to sue the manufacturer of the Little Red Wagon. It doesn't do anything to help me. I don't get anything out of your bill. All I get is less freedom. That's how I'm seeing this. If I'm a manufacturer, yeah, I'm helped. We're doing this for the manufacturers, clearly. It doesn't help me to help the manufacturer. You're only taking away my freedom, is the way I'm seeing this. It seems to me that most of the legislation that has come through this body this year has been to help businesses and others at the expense of everyday citizens. Like every time we have a tort bill, you know, we have a little bit less freedom. And sometime or another, we got to hold the line and say enough is enough. And anyway, I hope you understand that my position is a principled one and that I'm not.
I understand that.
Yeah. I have the highest respect for you, Senator.
Thank you.
Mr. President.
Likewise.
Senator from Buchanan, purpose to seek recognition.
To inquire of the Senator from the first.
Senator from the first, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan.
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
So, Senator, right now under the state law, if I'm injured by a product and the manufacturer of that product is located outside the state of Missouri, can I sue that manufacturer under Missouri law?
Yeah.
So just because we have this law here in Missouri, the manufacturer doesn't really have an incentive to move out of the state unless they're going to be selling all of their product in the state in which they're located. Isn't that correct?
As a matter of law and logic, yes. As a matter of whimsy, I suppose it is possible that a business could decide that simply because they don't like a particular state law that they may decide to relocate, even if it doesn't impact them directly. But I don't think that too many businesses go to the time, trouble, and expense of doing that.
Right.
And in fact, we have a number of outstanding manufacturers here in Missouri who put their name behind all sorts of products in our state and do so for products that are expected to last a whole lot longer than 10 years.
Right. But the thing is that a manufacturer in Missouri doesn't have any incentive to move out of Missouri because of the current law, nor will they have any incentive to move into Missouri if we change the law. I just don't buy that argument, do you?
No, I don't think so. I mean, greater than zero, maybe some tangential, infinitesimal incentive conceivably.
Well, the reason that manufacturers choose Missouri is because of our tax climate.
I think they choose Missouri because of our skilled workforce, as long as we don't continue to undermine it here.
And our environment and our school systems and stuff like that. But
yeah.
But they don't move in or out of Missouri because of the liability law that Missouri's citizens.
No, and if you think about it, and don't get me wrong, in this day and age, in this 21st century global economy, there are a whole lot of manufacturers that move. And in fact, most of the time manufacturing moves, it isn't from this state to that state, it's from this country to that country. I mean, we have a whole lot less to worry about where our product liability tort laws stack up against other states than we do about the fact that American workers make respectable wages and manufacturing workers in other parts of the world make a mere pittance. I mean, that's a much more powerful draw of manufacturers to leave the state than anything that's going to be in our tort books, tort laws. The other point to be made, of course, is tax considerations, absolutely. And again, it's less what Missouri's tax code looks like versus any other state's tax code or tax incentive package. And again, the federal corporate income tax rate probably is far more powerful
vis-a-vis manufacturers leaving this country than, again, anything to do with our statute of repose policy under state law.
Right. Now, the statute of repose takes precedence over the statute of limitations, doesn't it?
Well, they're different. They're similar but different concepts. So the answer is that in any given case, either can take precedence over the other, which is to say, if you have it's a really complicated answer to that question, Senator. Do you want to hear
the statute
it?
Of, if the statute of repose runs out before the statute of limitation starts, the statute of repose wins.
That's right. Well, and so, for instance, in with respect to the statute of limitation, you have what's called the discovery rule. You may have a cause of action that you don't know that you have. The classic case would be mesothelioma in asbestos. There are people walking around with asbestos fiber in their lungs who don't know it until they get diagnosed with mesothelioma, frequently decades after the exposure. And so it is unfair to say, well, if let's say, and I'm going to pick a number out of the air, let's just say there's a 5-year statute of limitation for that cause of action. It is unfair to say that the statute of limitations that applies to somebody who is diagnosed with mesothelioma at age 67, who was exposed at age 37, well, it's unreasonable to say that the statute of limitations would bar their claim from the date they were 37 because they didn't have the condition yet. They hadn't discovered their cause of action. They had no way to know that 20 years down the road this was going to basically give them a death sentence. But if you're diagnosed with mesothelioma at age 67, and I'm picking out of the air a 5-year statute of limitation. I don't know the number off the top of my head. But you wait, you survive 8 years. Yeah, then at that point, you've blown the statute of limitation. Statute of repose works a little bit differently. It's not discovery as to the plaintiff. It's when a product enters stream of commerce as to the producer. So for instance, if you have a school bus that runs off the assembly lines let's go way back in time to 2005, because a school bus manufactured in 2005 under the statute of repose in this bill could have 1,000 defects that wouldn't become patent or wouldn't become apparent or wouldn't cause harm until long, pardon the pun, a long ways down the road for that school bus. And if you have a statute of repose, it doesn't matter if you have an axle that lasts 12 years on a school bus that might otherwise be able to operate for 20. If you have a 10-year statute of repose and that axle wears out at year 12 and everybody on the bus is killed, no cause of action.
Well, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Let's just say that I bought a car.
Okay.
And the car had an unknown defective airbag.
Sure.
In the steering wheel.
Sure.
And it was defective.
Yep.
Nobody knew it was defective.
Right.
But it was defective.
Yep.
And the person who installed it could not have known that it was defective. And 11 years after I bought the car, I had my first motor vehicle accident. The airbag didn't go off, and my wife was killed.
Yep.
I wouldn't have any recourse. Anymore.
Correct. Yeah, you'd lose on summary judgment, if not dismissal.
The thing is that there are some things that will only ever be used the first time and the only time like that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give up my freedom of going to court and saying, I want to sue that car company because they put a defective airbag in. I mean, they didn't knowingly put that airbag in. I couldn't prove that. And they probably didn't in reality put it in knowingly.
Right.
But I would not be able to sue. And it was a defect made by the manufacturer 11 years earlier. I'm totally out of luck because of this bill.
And out of life without recourse to the
deceased. And I don't want to give up my right to sue because of the defective airbag. And I just now thought of that just without even trying. I mean, I imagine if I stood here long enough, I could probably think of dozens of examples.
We make a lot of military aircraft in our state, but I'm going to use the example of civilian aircraft. You've got a lot of things in commerce that are expected to operate for an awfully long time. And, you can have things go wrong in civilian aircraft far after 10 years. But, I mean, a lot of those planes are beyond a quarter century old.
Are you a pilot?
I am not.
Well, I am.
Are you really?
And let me tell you that, aircraft have to fly at, say, 1,200 RPM, and you've got to be able to fly hundreds of miles with that engine operating at 1,200 RPM and not have it fail.
Yeah.
And everything is kind of doubled on there. You've got, like, two spark plugs and two magnetos and we're talking about a jet. The thing is, they make those airplanes to last a long time because it's so critical. If parts wear out, they manufacture those parts and they are intended to last many years. And so if one lasts for 10 years and one day, and then it wears out suddenly, unexpectedly, because it was defective,
well,
I want to be able to sue because I can lose my whole family in that airplane crash.
Not to put too fine a point on it, Senator, but I'm less familiar. I mean, we've had a couple of very high-profile incidents of that nature in our state, one in 1976, one in 2000, and certainly others as well. I'm less familiar with the 1976 crash, but there was a product liability dispute that arose out of the 2000 crash, and I don't know, don't care to know, how this bill would have impacted subsequent litigation arising out of that crash. But the point is, there are countless things that are manufactured with an expectation that it's going to be around a lot longer than 10 years down the road.
Do you remember the name of the congressman who was running for U.S. Senate?
Jerry Litton.
Jerry Litton, yeah. He took off at Chillicothe Airport in a twin-engine airplane, went up. The crankshaft on the one engine broke, causing the other engine to flip the plane over and augured it right in, killed Jerry Litton and his son, who was flying, and others. And it was a broken crankshaft. I don't know whether the plane was 10 or 11 years old, but if this law had been in effect, their family would not have been able to take that manufacturer to court. I mean, like, maybe I might vote for this if instead of 10 years it was 100 years, or my lifespan, or something. But as it is, what I think that this is doing is that that it's taking away too much of my freedom.
Well, look, we have the means of recourse for defective products for the specific reason that, unfortunately, these things happen. These things happen. Maybe not quite every day, but far more often than we would like. And the reality is that products put into the stream of commerce without the intention of being dangerous sometimes injure or kill people.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the case of the airbag in the car.
Sure.
Okay, let's just say that they put an airbag in. They didn't know it was defective because you can't really test every airbag. Once you test it, it's no longer worth anything. And so even if we had the original knew or should have known,
yeah,
they wouldn't know, and nor should they have known, but yet they did put the defective airbag in. And I don't think that it's reasonable to let them off the hook just because one out of every so many airbags is defective.
Well, To that point,
they should test many airbags until they're absolutely certain that the likelihood of having an airbag is so small that it's not likely to ever happen that there will be one.
But your point is a good one, because the way this bill is currently worded, you basically have to sell the product with the intention of maiming or killing somebody in order to be found liable. I mean, knowingly is an awfully high standard. And let's take the recent example of particular kind of mobile phone or a particular kind of PDA that had a rechargeable battery that was known to catch fire. And for this particular device, there were numerous, I don't know if it was dozens, I don't know if it was hundreds, but of incidents where within weeks of when it hit the market, these things were catching fire. And I mean, I think they were banned on flights because these things caught on fire. It's one thing, if a company learns that their product is doing that and does nothing, but for the first one that was sold, for the first probably several thousand units that were sold, there was a latent design defect in that battery or the recharging system for the battery that I would like to think that company had no idea was a problem. Until you get them out into the marketplace, and lo and behold, people's homes and cars and desks are literally catching on fire because of what happens when you plug this thing into a wall. You'd like to think that they knew that, but the point is, with that being the standard, it's like you get the first, I don't know, however many of the things you sell on opening weekend, you're kind of spotted that free because you wouldn't have had a way to know until then.
You know, manufacturers aren't always squeaky clean. Like, for example, do you remember what happened with Volkswagen? I mean, Volkswagen actually designed their cars and their computer systems such that when they hooked their cars up to the tester to see if they met the emission standards, the cars changed the fuel flow and various other timing factors such that they met the emission standards, but then immediately after the test, they went right back to being dirty again.
Right.
That's just incredible.
You know, I had a similar incident in a case I handled the better part of 15 years ago. It was a commercial contract dispute involving the online computers in police cars. And it was a contract termination where this particular vendor made basically a squad car laptop that was I'm not going to get the terminology quite right, but it basically had cellular telecommunication ability, so they were always online as they were driving around. And there was a program, there was a feature programmed into this thing because these things had a terrible time holding a charge. And they were programmed to look as though they were holding a charge even when they were not. So you literally had police officers driving around in a car with their connection to the outside world at 10% when they thought it was at 70%. And I guess they would recharge when they would, park and take them out of the vehicle overnight. But the point is, these folks literally had cops driving around with their batteries dead or about to die when the thing's telling them they're carrying close to full charge. And let's just say that wasn't like the best fact for the other side in the case. There were other issues in that case, but
well, the problem for me with this bill, Senator, is that right now I have this freedom, and it's a guarantee by our laws that if I'm injured by a manufacturer, then I have a certain amount of time to go to court and make my case. I hire an attorney, I go, I make my case, I get to do discovery, I get to present witnesses, I get to do it before a jury, I get the opportunity to have the court decide
right.
the facts of the case and whether or not this manufacturer should compensate me for my damages.
And you know what? You might very well try that and lose. But you
I
might
don't want to give that up.
You have the right to that day in court.
Yeah, I want my day in court.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I mean, I care about these manufacturers that they're making
yeah.
stuff. But if they've done a good job, I think that we have a court system that will find for them. And
no,
it's not like, and the problem is that they're saying, oh, woe is me. I'm getting sued too often, and I don't like it. And so we got to change the law to protect us from getting sued because it's just too painful to get all these lawsuits against us
well,
over time.
A couple of
we can have that.
A couple of four instances in terms of long winning streaks for manufacturers in product cases. I'll give you two examples.
Well, Senator, I have on the one hand, I have the right to go to court and get your concerns addressed under our legal system.
Right.
And on the other hand, I have the freedom of the manufacturers from getting sued too much. Like, which is more important? I mean, it's just so obvious that what's more important is the right of the people to go to court to get your concerns redressed. That's more important. It is not more important to protect the manufacturers from getting sued when somebody thinks that they've done a bad job. Let them defend themselves in court. Don't make me give up my freedom to protect those manufacturers. Wrong. This is wrong.
Senator, I share your concern. In point of fact, there are many of these cases brought. Many of them are successful. I suspect probably the majority of them are not. And to give you two examples of industries that have seen a disproportionate share of product liability claims brought against them unsuccessfully, probably the classic example, of course, is the tobacco industry.
Uh-huh.
And another pretty good example is the firearm industry. And, of course, there have been laws passed specifically with respect to the latter. But the number of defense verdicts in each of those contexts is easily in the hundreds. And it's not as if there haven't been any plaintiff verdicts, too. But the overwhelming majority of those cases has been decided one way. By juries. I mean, by juries.
Senator, let me just say that I'm willing to participate in a long, 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 very long, longer, long, long, long discussion about this bill.
Well, Senator, I understand that. And let me suggest this. We've had an awful lot of bills regarding access to the civil court system that have already been perfected on the floor this year, some of which, after considerable debate at great length, well, others of which, I've got to tell you, I have tried this year because for a variety of different reasons, I've tried to be as reasonable as I can. I mean, we had, collateral source and Daubert. Those are both bills we'd put on the governor's desk before, and, I've been a no vote on them. But, we had essentially established a Senate position previously on those bills that I didn't support, but we'd established it. In the case of collateral source, we were here until 6 a.m. one morning, and essentially at my behest. With respect to Daubert, less so. We perfected that fairly quickly last year. But the point is, I have not come to this body this year looking to relitigate those issues. And even though there was an extensive discussion of collateral source, I believe, addressing issues that you were concerned about, You know, we have not, you know, it's not as if we have had that long discussion about very many of these bills. I mean, the senator from Boone had a, I'll say it this way, a bad health facilities bill that you had an amendment on that I think got that off dead center.
Yeah.
That, you know, now, by the way, is being walked back in other versions of that bill that are advancing. And you can imagine my thoughts on that. But, you know, that was a bill that was on the floor for basically an entire Monday evening. I don't know if it was from 4 to midnight, but it was a good long debate. I wouldn't say like a super long debate. The senator from Franklin has passed any number of workers' compensation changes. I may at some point inquire of him just to remind me of how many of those bills he's passed. It's been at least two or three, I believe. Some better than others, some more objectionable than others. But the point is, I don't know that I voted for any of those, but boy, do we perfect them all. And the senator from the third, in a matter of 2 weeks, had Senate Bill 43 and 45 leave. And of all the discussions we've had this year about access to the courts, it was Senate Bill 43 that engendered the longest discussion. But again, we were all home by 3 a.m. that night or morning.
Well, I think that this bill might then become the record setter.
Well, I understand that I hear what you're saying, and what I would suggest is, you may have seen I started folding papers furiously when you called on me. I was looking through the. Oh, let's see here. You may recall I dropped a 100-page amendment followed by a 101-page substitute amendment. I can't even remember at this point. It must have been yesterday, but at some point earlier in the week. That has led to and I can't even get to the page number here to see how long the thing is. But there's a floor substitute that I'm about two-thirds of the way through reviewing here that runs, 89 pages long. That's a bill that's, given the scope of the issues that admittedly I have introduced into it, it's going to take some time. I mean, maybe we can pre-negotiate that one and work out whatever kinks are in the sub, if any, without having to use the body's time on the floor. But, even so, I suspect there are some other folks that are going to be heard from on that bill. Maybe not. But the point is, we've got an awful lot of calendar. At some point this year, and I don't know, maybe we had your PDMP bill on the floor, and I'm sure we've had some others. But, you know, at some point I'm on the calendar. Maybe this year.
Well, it's just that, I've sat and watched as our freedoms get kind of eroded little by little, taken away. You know, just the Daubert bill. Yeah. I used to have the freedom to just know that my expert that I choose was going to be able to go to court and advocate for me.
Yeah.
And now I have to, like, pay more money, to get my expert there. I've given the court the ability to take away my freedom of choosing the expert that I want, and I'm frustrated by that.
Yeah.
I'm frustrated by the collateral source rule.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't allow me to present the evidence of my total medical bills if I have insurance.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, I don't have the right to present to the jury an important piece of evidence that people who don't have insurance get to present. And as a result, the jury gets prejudiced and diminishes or likely to diminish my non-economic damages. It's clear as crystal to me that the collateral source rule bill takes away some of my freedom.
I agree.
It's absolutely, and I don't want any giveaway anymore of my freedom. If my wife is killed in a car crash because of a defective airbag 10 years and one day after the car is purchased, by gollies, I ought to be able to go to court and sue over
and
that.
And you know what? You don't want to – I mean, you're talking about a case that would involve one tragedy, but to take away somebody's ability to recover on behalf of a deceased loved one would truly be adding not insult to injury, but insult to wrongful death.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. And let's face it, we're talking about things that kill people here.
Yeah, I mean, we are. We're talking about things that can kill you.
Yeah.
And your ability to go to court and get sued. And, I mean, get justice.
Yeah. You know,
but the thing is that our court system, we have the best court system compared to many others in the world. I mean, we have our freedom because of many battles that were fought on our behalf. I mean,
yeah.
Like, I have this freedom to go to court because I live in the United States of America, and I live in Missouri.
Yep.
I don't live in Zimbabwe, where they don't have that, or name any other country. And a lot of people died. They went to war. They got injured. They died. They gave their lives for me to have freedoms. And I have said this repeatedly. The best way for us to honor all of those people is to protect the freedoms that they fought for. And, you know, we don't just honor them by giving veterans, you know, the right to start a business and not have to pay their property tax. That's or to pay the Secretary of State for their fee. That's not the best way to honor the veterans. The best way to honor the veterans is to actually protect the freedoms that they fought for so that we could have them. And this is one of those. I want to honor the veterans today.
You know, Senator, to take the comment that you just made and weave it into an example of Missouri history that is arguably germane to this bill, you know, Harry Truman, when he served in the United States Senate, going into World War II and during World War II, he was, I think, reelected in 1940 to the U.S. Senate. He formed a committee that looked at great length into military contracting scandals and situations where manufacturers were selling goods to the United States military for the conduct of World War II that was either on an artificially inflated price or sometimes just shoddy stuff. And the concern that then Senator Truman had was that you had GIs going into a war theater with shoddy equipment that was jeopardizing their lives because some war profiteer was trying to make a buck. And not to put too fine a point on it, but any war profiteer who would have manufactured their product within a certain number of years of when World War II happened, if it was equipment more than 10 years old, you know, that was third hand at the time but sold at second hand rates, you would have had folks endangering our troops in a manner that could not have been recovered for under Missouri law if this bill passed.
Yeah. You know, what about cases where something is just not used all that much? Like, for example, a snowblower.
Sure.
I mean, you buy a snowblower and you only use it, you know, 3 days a year.
Well, with global warming, which
people
can debate,
but less.
A day or two a year at the most.
I mean, you know, snowblowers are kind of, you know, like, you don't use them very often.
No.
And so
I mean, not here anyway.
So literally,
not in Missouri.
In 10 years, you might use a snowblower between 10 and 30 times, maybe,
that's
if
depending.
You live in an area that doesn't have all that much snow.
Right.
But
yeah.
But so, you know, 10 years and one day later, your snowblower craps out. I mean, you ought to be able to.
Yeah.
You ought to be able to say that snowblower didn't last as long as it really should have.
Right.
I mean, just things that you don't use very often, are there are a lot of those things in your life.
Yeah.
And just because a manufacturer might have this hanging over their head, oh my gosh, that's just horrible that we should require manufacturers to be at risk for more than 10 years.
To stand behind their product for the life of the product.
Yeah.
And,
I mean,
you know, I get it. There are 50-year-old jungle gyms out there, right? I mean, I
wonder, what about a guarantee that, what if you got a lifetime guarantee? Would the guarantee supersede the statute of repose? I'm just curious.
Well, it depends on what you mean by that. In
well,
most,
let's just say
in
that
most
there was
cases,
a guarantee
what,
that
unless... what are described as guarantees in the stream of commerce are, in fact, exceedingly limited warranties.
Let's just say that you had a guarantee or whatever, a warranty, that was for 11 years, and the statute of repose ran, and then immediately the product broke. Would the guarantee, still, be in effect?
I'm sorry, Senator. I hate to say it. May very well depend on the fine print, at least pursuant to the terms of the fine print.
Oh, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Does the statute of repose supersede the guarantee?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The guarantee would give you a separate cause of action. I mean, at that point, you've got a breach of warranty or a breach of contract claim, as opposed to a product liability claim.
I see.
But I would, pardon the again, two puns and one inquiry. I would just about guarantee you, Senator, that the terms of that guarantee would probably also say, among other things, and we're going to an arbitrator, not to a jury, and your damages are capped at the value of the product, and we'll depreciate it for the life of it that you actually used, and it's not going to be, I mean, the recourse that we're talking about in this bill is far more powerful than what most of those guarantees or warranties are ever going to provide.
Right. Well, Senator, we have to have some kind of a game plan here.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking that I might do some other inquiries for a little bit.
Sure.
And I don't know if we're going to break at 5:30 or what we're going to do.
I don't know either.
I might do some other inquiries for a little bit just to kind of get the sense of where some others are.
Sure.
And let you maybe have an opportunity to make some conversations with some others. And kind of see what you can come up with.
You know, I appreciate that, Senator. Let me, if you don't mind, let me footnote what I just said. There is language in the bill that provides that the period of repose runs coextensive with the warranty, I do believe. And I'm looking to make sure that I'm right about that. Let's see here. I am looking at...
Well, I just was curious because I didn't know.
Stream of commerce, human action with the section is brought, brings an action for indemnity or contribution.
Yeah, it's on line 21.
Yeah, all right.
On page
I was
two.
About there. First place item, stream of commerce state in a written warranty or an advertisement to the public. The item is expected useful life for a period certain that is greater than 10 years, in which event any action that is otherwise within the section is not barred by any other presumable. And 2 years following the expiration of that period certain. I hate to say it, but if you make that the law, and not that all manufacturing occurs in Missouri, but you give manufacturers a very powerful incentive to stop making claims about how long this is good for, and they have an incentive to define its useful life as something shorter than what it might than what the average consumer might try to get out of it. At the same time, it is a helpful clarification.
Okay. Well, so anyway, I'll let you go and maybe have some side conversations.
Sure.
and that'll allow me to do some other inquiry. Would
Senator,
that be okay with you?
Absolutely, Senator.
Okay,
you.
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd. Senator from the 23rd does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms, please summons the senator from the 23rd. Senator from the 23rd, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan?
I do, Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for taking my inquiry. Are you familiar with this bill?
I apologize, Senator. I've been in a meeting for the past 30 minutes. I have missed most of your conversation.
You have been listening?
I've been on the background, but I'll be honest with you. I have not.
Okay, that's okay. This bill is designed to protect manufacturers from being sued more than 10 years after they put their item of product into the stream of commerce, basically, or sell it or lease it. So in other words, it protects the manufacturers from being sued after 10 years. That's what it does. Are you looking for a copy of the bill? Or
I'm getting it right now, Senator.
It's Bill 220, Senate Bill 220.
Okay.
So, anyway.
All right.
Okay, so that's what the bill does. It adds on what's called a statute of repose. Now, currently, Senator, there's a statute of limitations that starts to run the day you get injured by a product. And then you can sue the manufacturer. So 20 years goes by. You know, your airbag doesn't go off in your car. And as a result, your wife is killed. Okay, now the airbag, it was unknown. Nobody knew that it was defective, but it was. It didn't go off. It was, and it, the engineers, you know, the forensic scientists or whatever, they determined, oh, that was a defective one. Nobody knew. Nobody could know. If you pass the statute of repose, you won't be able to go to court because you're past the statute of repose. But if it's, you know, 20 years later and your wife gets killed in the car crash, you have the statute of limitations starts to run then, and you have a period of time that you can go to court and ask the court for damages. You can say, I was damaged, Your Honor. And you can present your case to the jury. And so what I'm saying to you is that this bill reduces your liberty. It reduces your freedom. Because now you have the freedom to, once injured, go to court before the end of the statute of limitations. After this bill passes, you don't have that freedom anymore. You have, your freedom ends at the end of the statute of repose, 10 years after the item was put into the stream of commerce. Now, you know, you're a military veteran. And I have said, and I'm going to say it to you, the best way for us to honor our veterans is to protect the liberty that they have worked to give us and to protect with their putting themselves into harm's way. I mean, I don't think that the best way to honor our veterans is to give them special perks in the law. It's not, you know, to make sure that they get good health care, although that's important. The best way to honor our veterans is to protect the liberty and the freedoms that they gave us. I don't know if you agree with that.
Well, of course I agree with that. And I think, Senator, anybody in the Any of the chamber here would agree with that.
You know, the legislature can give away in a short period of time freedom that took us, I don't know, many years to actually gain and is hard fought for and a lot of blood spilt so that we could have these freedoms. And every time we pass one of these bills that takes away a little bit of freedom, our total aggregate freedom gets diminished a little bit. Well, this could be an important freedom because some of these products that we're talking about, if they become defective or they break, you know, they are defective, they can kill you, like the crankshaft on your King Air or on your airplane. You know, if it breaks 10 years and one day after you bought it, you know, in usual service, and your family is killed because the plane augers in, like happened to Jerry Litton on election night, then your freedom is totally taken away. I mean, a very, very important freedom. And so that's what I have concerns about this bill. Can you resonate with that?
I do. I understand what you're saying, Senator. I think when I'm looking at this particular bill, I actually heard this bill in committee now, and my memory is jogging. And I think the discussion centered around the idea that we want to, on one hand, protect the rights of the citizens to seek redress if they feel that they have been unjustly injured, and on the other hand, to find a reasonable period of time beyond which it's difficult to really point back to some sort of injustice on the part of the manufacturer. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm seeing it now on page 2, line 39, we actually identified instances where 10 years wasn't appropriate, and specifically with related to asbestos, the asbestos discussion and the liability that goes beyond 10 years. So we acknowledge that there actually are situations, which we've identified this year, in this law that go beyond 10 years. I think about, to use your analogy of the car, someone purchases a car, 10 years down the road, something happens with that car, and this bill would prevent someone from seeking redress if it had been beyond 10 years. Is that how you read this?
Well, I mean, absolutely. I don't see anything in this bill that would address the case of the defective airbag that was installed, was defective, but nobody knew it was defective. I mean, I couldn't prove that it was knowingly concealed, that it was no good, or that they knew or should have known that it was no good, because, I mean, you can't test an airbag and then put it into the car. Mm-hmm. Once you test it...
Let me give you an example maybe from my own experience. So, as you know, I own a skylight company, and when we installed skylights on roofs, I was always under the reality that if we did anything wrong, if we installed the product wrong, if there was a defect within the product of some sort, we knew that it would show up within the first rainstorm. Because the first time it rained on that roof, guess what? The product is leaking.
You felt that 10 years would cover you in that situation.
Well, I'm pointing out that in my particular product line and experience, we knew right away if there was something wrong. Either something we did wrong, something was manufactured wrong. We knew right away because the customer automatically would feel the burn of that problem right away. Now, on the other hand, a lot of products don't have that, which I think is what you're getting at. You may have a product, the asbestos as an example, which goes beyond 10 years. But in the case of the car example that you've given, a lot of the parts and pieces in the cars that we're putting today, it's very difficult to determine after 10 years whether or not that it was actually related to something the manufacturer did. So I think there's an attempt to identify what a reasonable amount of time is for liability cases to be brought against a manufacturer. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that's where the senator from Callaway is going. I think that's a worthwhile discussion, and I'm interested in finding what the right number is in terms of trying to quantify that, because we want to protect the rights of the individual. We also want to protect the rights of the individuals that are part of businesses that are manufacturing these parts.
Wait a second. Back up. Why do I really care that much to protect a manufacturer from a lawsuit that a person who thinks that manufacturer wronged him or her can bring. If the manufacturer prevails in court, then they prevail. Let the court decide. I mean, isn't the court capable of determining whether or not it's reasonable that they should be held liable?
Sure, of course. I think it
actually costs the manufacturer to go to court, and this is what we don't want. We don't want the manufacturer to have to, like, go to court, right?
I think that if what we're protecting beyond that 10-year, we're not really, if it's not reasonable that we expect that the products we're manufacturing and producing today, that there is something that a consumer should reasonably be able to have that protection of. Why, I don't know why. I get what you're saying about the court being able to determine fault. I agree with that. But at a 10-year time frame, I think that that's a long enough period of time that I'm not sure there's anything that we would need to protect on behalf of.
Okay, I want you to tell me how it is just for my spouse driving a car that's 10 years and one day old and is involved in a motor vehicle accident and the airbag doesn't go off and she dies as a result, that I would be precluded from suing by this bill, how that's just.
Well, in the example that you give, you're making several assumptions that there is fault there. We don't know if there's fault there.
Wait,
I don't know if it's...
No, I'm assuming that the airbag was defective because you know why? It didn't go off. So it didn't go off, so there's this car crash. I take the airbag out. I show it to the scientist, the forensic specialist. They go, when I took it apart, I found out that inside of it was defective. Okay? And you know, you only ever get one chance at the airbag. One chance. And so they find out, and they go like, oh, man, that baby's defective. But under this law, it doesn't matter that it was defective. There's no way that they could have known. There's no way they should have known. It wasn't done knowingly. It was just defective. Somebody screwed up. It was defective. Now, why 10 years? Why not 100 years? Well, it's kind of arbitrary. And so here's the thing, Senator. The deal is that,
Three senators standing. Senator from Callaway, what purpose do you rise?
President, would you please lay that?
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from Cole, purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
I'm saying that loud, Mr. President, so that the senator from the second can make his announcement.
Announcements.
And I do want to thank Bill LaRue for giving us permission to go to this order of business.
Announcements. Senator from the second.
Senate. I have to thank apologize to Al, who's been reminding me all afternoon to make this announcement. 15 minutes after adjournment, your Committee on General Laws will meet in Senate Committee Room Number 1 to resume our hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Announcements. Senator from Butler, what purpose do you rise? Say that again, Senator. We didn't hear it.
Inquire, Senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Butler?
Yes, sir.
You may proceed, Senator.
Sorry, Senator, I missed my cue. As a vice chairman of that committee, I should have took care of that announcement while the chairman was busy.
Well, we're going to let it go this time, but next time,
I got it.
There may be repercussions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Announcements. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
On behalf of the Reverend Grock, just one more time, I will remind anybody interested, 7:30 a.m. sharp in the Bingham Conference Room tomorrow morning for the prayer breakfast.
Thank you. Announcements. Hearing none. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No other business coming for the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand adjourned under the rules. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand adjourned under the rules.